I'm not afraid to like try, but I think that prevents 99% of people. Like they're just like paralyzed by the fear of like what other people think.
This is Chan with The Plan, the podcast, a podcast providing career advice and easy actionable steps for frustrated professionals, helping you overcome career challenges so you stop feeling confused and defeated and start feeling focused and confident in order to excel in your career. I'm your host, Max Chan. Now let's dive into the episode. Hey, Davidson, welcome to the show.
Hey, Max. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Happy late Lunar New Year, right? Is it still going on? No, it's done now, right?
Well, apparently, I haven't been to Vietnam, but my mom says they celebrate for the whole month in Vietnam. So I'm like, dude, that's crazy. I have to go sometime.
Yeah, I just had lunch with my mom and my aunt a couple Sundays ago, and that's it for the celebration. I get the red envelope money because even though I'm in my 30s, I'm still her son. So it's still like give the money type of thing, like tradition. Aww. But like we only just did that one day and we didn't do much after. But you're saying like in Vietnam, they celebrate like the whole month?
Yeah, that's what my mom says. She's like, yeah, there's like festivities. There's like the whole month is like crazy. And I was like, really? When she grew up, it was like right in the middle of the city. So maybe because she's like in the center of everything, it just seems like there's like a lot of celebrations.
Speaking of like a new year, usually people say new year, new me, or they want to change their trajectory of their career or their personal life. You have an interesting story, which is why I want you to come on my podcast, because you're doing this popular form of content, which is interviewing people on the street. I'm sure you've seen a lot of those types of content out there. Popular ones, since we're both in the career coaching space, the salary transparency street. I'm pretty sure you heard that one, where this lady interviews people asking what their income is. Another one is doing something similar, American income, asking the same question. So there's a lot of those TikTok, Instagram channels where they interview people randomly on the street. For that one, it's just salary. I've seen one about dating, about like how you two meet. Obviously, the popular one is this guy goes up to people. I think his name is Daniel Mack, where he goes up to popular people with expensive cars, say, oh, what do you do for a living? So that content is pretty popular right now. But before we get into that, Davidson, why don't you tell us a bit about your background in terms of your career prior to diving into this content creation journey you're currently on?
Yeah. So I grew up really poor, you know, living off of government assistance. Like my mom does nails for a living and, you know, I didn't really have a dad growing up. So I wanted to really work at LinkedIn because I was like, wait, so you can just literally message anyone on LinkedIn and like just pick their brain? Like that sounds amazing. So what I did was I reached out to like all the Asian people that worked at LinkedIn and networked with them. And I was like, hey, like I want to be like you one day, like teach me, show me the ropes, like teach me how you got into LinkedIn. So this guy named Garrett Roth, who's like this Filipino guy who's in charge of like the LinkedIn Asian Alliance, which is like the ERG, which just means like the allyship club where we advocate for a lot of the like the Asian related topics. He was like, hey, Davidson, like, do you still want to work at LinkedIn? I was like, yeah, sure. Yeah, of course. Like I've always wanted to work at LinkedIn. So I have about 10 years of like tech sales experience. So I've sold like pretty much every type of technology, MarTech, cybersecurity, HR tech, et cetera. And because I was so good at interviewing, and this is so crazy to say this, but I've had 15 jobs since I've graduated, which is back in 2011. So in 12 and a half years, I've had like 15 different jobs. So needless to say, I did a lot of soul searching and finding myself. It's been a long journey, but it's been a super fruitful, rewarding one. I got to travel the world and work at all these amazing tech companies.
You said you graduated in 2011, right? So are you an 89 baby?
I'm 87. So
oh, 87. Okay.
I got held back in third grade and I partied a lot. So I did 5 years at Rutgers.
Yeah, I'm 89. I did a fifth year as well. Actually, that's interesting. If you want to share, like, how come you got held back in third grade?
Dude, this is, it's funny, right? Because we always overcompensate. I went from public school. So I went to school in SoCal, right? Where it was like an all Chinese school. So it was a very advanced. So my uncle was kind enough to pay for me to transition to private school when I was in California. As a lot of people know, when you go from a public education where I grew up was like probably more like poor area to like a fancy private school, like it's like night and day in terms of like the quality and like how strenuous the curriculum was.
Going back to your LinkedIn story. So it's kind of funny how like I always tell people to target, like, for example, like if you're in marketing, you target people in marketing at the company you're interested in working at, maybe a cross-functional team. So marketing, maybe do sales instead. You did the racial targeting where you target other Asians, right? So is it because like, you think you have a better connection that way? It's because you have a common ethnical background?
Yeah, to your point, I think we just have to find any sort of commonality, right? So basically, I've been in sales my whole life, right? So I would either reach out to anyone that went to Rutgers University. So I would like host these like Rutgers meetups, like, hey, Rutgers alums, like if you want to meet other Rutgers co-founders, like come to this networking event, right? So in my case, like any sort of commonality. So I was like, all right, Asian is like, we try to help each other out. And funny enough, like a lot of my clients, like I asked them like, hey, why'd you get back to me? They're like, because you're Asian. I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, there's this popular Facebook group when I think it's still active. It's called RYSE, I think. I don't know if you've seen it.
I haven't joined that one yet.
Yeah, it's like, I think like 30 to 40,000 Asians, like job seeker group, and like a lot of Asian recruiters host job openings and stuff. I'm not a big fan of like leveraging the race card for opportunities, right? It's a form of nepotism, in my opinion. But again, like to each their own, right? I have used LinkedIn to network into a job. Just quickly, I started my career in a digital marketing agency, and the company's small, so there is a lack of growth opportunities. So when I realized that I was capped, I wanted to like branch out and move to one of the big corporations in Canada. And I worked with a career coach, and that's why I'm also in the career coach as well, because I believe the value of having a good one, because that career coach really helped me pivot into industry. And since these big companies are not going to know the small agency from some small suburb in Toronto, networking helped me build the connections that I needed to get me a referral in for an interview and help me get that job, right? So I also believe in the value of networking. So in your opinion, from working at LinkedIn, and some of my listeners are job seekers, what is your advice in terms of networking and reaching out to people to get a good response and potentially get referred in for an interview?
Yeah. So I'm so passionate about this topic, and I even created like a whole free course about this. I've been lucky, right? Because I worked at LinkedIn, you're surrounded by a lot of people that know how to use LinkedIn really, really well. So the first step I always say, it's like, find any sort of common ground. Like for you, like you said, right? Someone who's worked at an agency, someone that has been in marketing, someone that's been in sales, like any sort of, what's your similar background? What school did you go to? Right. Even if they follow like Oprah, they posted something about like, hey, I really enjoyed reading like Masters of Skill by Reid Hoffman. Right. So, and then I always say like, mention something like very specific that just made them feel like, okay, this guy actually took the time to like read my profile. Cause as you know, nowadays people are so lazy, they just copy and paste the same message. Right. So some sort of personalization. I think the third step is like, be genuinely curious. Like, don't talk about yourself at all, right? Just be like, hey, Max, like I saw that you have all these amazing podcast episodes. Like the key is like specifically enjoyed this particular episode where you went through X, Y, Z. It's like, that really called to me. That really touched my heart. Like, thank you for doing that, right? And then that person feels like, oh, wow, this person actually like did something above and beyond. And then lastly, you don't ever ask them to refer you, but at the end, like, of course they're going to transition. They're like, hey, so how can I help you? Right. And that's when you have the opportunity to be like, hey, is there anyone that you think I could connect with that, you know, at LinkedIn? And they might be like, oh yes, my friend, blah, 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 works in digital marketing. Like I'll connect you guys. Right. Because they might not be like the person, but at least they can intro you to the right person. And that's like the most simple thing, but you'd be surprised. Like a lot of people are too lazy to even take the time to like read someone's profile. They're just like copy, paste. So that's like the simplest step, but it's worked for a lot of my clients.
Yeah, for sure. Like networking only works if you personalize the message, right? If it's a generic message, like people aren't stupid. They know if you just change the name and that's all you did, or and the company, but you don't go into detail about like their profile or anything. They'll know that you just copy and paste it. So they feel like they're just a number, and they're less likely to respond to you with your outreach. And the other thing I do want to mention in terms of the networking aspect is, like you said, it's all about like giving back. And a lot of job seekers be like, well, what can I give back? Because I'm looking for a job. They already have a job. But the give back is hearing their story, right? Because they might not always have the opportunity to talk about their career trajectory at work. Because people at work already know them, right? So there's nothing really new about like how they got there. But if someone reached out, say, hey, I saw your profile. Well, I saw that you went to Rutgers and you graduated, and you actually are still at the company that you started after graduation. Want to learn more about your career trajectory, right? And by you being an ear to them for them to tell you their story, that is a way of giving back, because it makes them feel good about talking about themselves, right?
Yeah. And it, like you said, right, what you said was like very genuine. As long as they feel that is genuine, right? It like, because people can tell like if this person actually cares or if this person is just, oh, like they just want something from me, you know, as long as there's like very sincere and it's like, okay, like this person, seems like a good person. Like, I feel that I can put my neck out, like, because at the end of the day, like, no one wants to refer someone that's like, ooh, like, what if this person bombs it? And then that hiring manager comes to me and be like, what the hell? Like, why'd you waste my time? You know, that's like the worst thing you could do. So as long as they feel like, okay, this person's a good person, like, it doesn't seem like this person is just going to bite me in the ass, like, it's all good.
Exactly. And going back to what you said, usually in these networking conversations, they'll ask you straight up, oh, so tell me a little bit about yourself. Why did you decide to reach out, right? Or what made you interested in this company? So in a way, indirectly, that is kind of your time to give the sales pitch, right? And then you can build rapport that way. And then even from my experience, like what you said, usually if the conversation is really good and genuine, they are willing to help you out, like offer, compared to you directly asking, right? Because again, it's about reciprocation, right? So if you spend some time to hear their story and ask good questions, at the end, they may be obliged to reach out and say, oh, what can I do to help you, right? Or if there's a job opening you're interested in, let me know and I'll see if I can refer you to the hiring manager, right? So as long as you're genuine, they tend to want to offer the help anyway.
Yeah. And I think, how can you give value to this person that might be older, like 20 years ahead or 15 years ahead, right? Like, it sounds weird, but like older people like younger people, because like younger people have a lot of energy. They have curiosity. Like, they just feel like, oh, wow, I'm helping. They get the satisfaction of like, hey, like I could sleep well at night knowing that I made a difference with someone. Right. And obviously, like, not 100% of people will get back to you. Let's say you message like 15, in my case, 15 Asian people. I've reached out to like 67 Asian people at LinkedIn, right? Only like 12 people got back to me. But hey, if I didn't reach out to those 67 people, like, I wouldn't have any of the 12 people reach out. That's the thing, right? People are always like, well, how do you get rejected 55 times? I'm like, well, I'm not focused on the 55 that didn't get back to me, right? But I'm just focused on like, hey, at least I have 12 new friends that I've never met before. So you don't know until you try.
100%. And for me, when I was doing networking, and the tell the clients that I work with is like, if you can get 15 to 20% response rate, then that's still pretty decent. And all you need is just one person to refer you in for an interview, or one person to refer you to someone else that you can talk to, right? And then you build up your reputation in that circle, so to speak, at that company, and then you're golden, right? So it's not really about the quantity, it's about getting the few that are willing to go above and beyond for you to get you that opportunity that you're looking for.
That's true. And to your point, there's also like the caliber of that person that's referring to, right? Like, if someone's obviously like pretty high up, maybe they're like a senior director at LinkedIn, like they've been there for 15 years, like they probably have a lot more pull than someone who's like straight out of college. Maybe this is their first job, usually, right? Unless that person's like the CEO's son or something like that, right? But you know, like that's another key too. And I learned the hard way, right? Because I would try to network with like anyone. You know, I mean, if you have no connection into like, let's say you want to work at Google and you have no one, then like, okay, yeah, then just reach out to anyone, right? But if you're just being a little bit more strategic, you're like, okay, like this person probably has a lot more pull than someone who just started yesterday, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, so don't be shy, right? Like, someone who just started may not be able to help you compared to someone who has like 10 to 15 years of experience at the same company. They're going to have more pull and more leverage and have a stronger network that they can refer you to if the conversation goes well. What happened after LinkedIn? You didn't jump right into like your content journey right now, right? That you did something in between, or did you go straight into the content stuff after?
No, it's been a wild ride. People, like when I leave LinkedIn, they're like, why would you leave LinkedIn? Like, that's like the best company, right? Like, to be honest, like it was one of the best companies. Like, we got all these perks, we get amazing health benefits, 401k, like the stock option's great, right? It's making good money, everyone's super smart. Like, why would you leave such a good company? I left because like, I felt like it was like such a big company that I was replaceable. And it's true, like, yes, I got the job over 130 other people that they interviewed for the job, right? But as soon as I left, there were 137 other people that were dying to get my position, you know? So I left to go to a coaching company called Coach Hub, where it was like something that, you know, since I've been so passionate about coaching my whole life, we sold coaching as an employee benefit to corporate. So that was like really cool to be part of a company that was based in Berlin, Germany. So we got to travel to Berlin. It was crazy. I think when I joined, I was like employee number 7 in the US. And then in that same year, it went up to 150 people, and then 12 of my friends that I recruited over to Coach Hub as well. So that was absolutely insane.
Okay, so you went to LinkedIn and then Coach Hub. And then after that is when you did the content creation? Or—
No. So I've had a lot of, in a relatively short amount of time, I had like all these different gigs. I worked at Udemy, which was for people who don't know, like Udemy is like this online market platform where you could like sell courses. So I sold, so my clients were like big companies like Samsung and like Fortune 100s. And we helped train, get them up to the AWS because, you know, the cloud is like huge. So we help companies train their tech team on getting certified with like all the different technical certifications. And then I went over to Fortune magazine, even though I was making really, really good money as an enterprise account executive, which is, for people who don't know, that's like basically the highest you can go in sales, where you're making like, potentially if you're good, you're making like $1 million a year. But even if you suck, you still make like 200K, you know? And then I went over to Fortune magazine because they wanted to experiment. So they created this product that was around mentorship. We were leveraging the Fortune 100 CEOs to mentor like the next generation of like future leaders. So I went over to build that out, and then they basically cut the whole program because of recession and all that. They're like, okay, Fortune, we realize like we're not good at this thing. We're usually better at this thing called ads and marketing, you know, the Fortune 500 list. So they ended up scrapping that project. And then I went over to TriNet, which is like a company I worked at like back in 2018 and 19, which sold health insurance and HR software and stuff like that. And then I left and started now doing what I do now.
What was the last company you mentioned? TriNet, right? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Yep. TriNet.
And they do HR software, right?
Yeah. It was like health insurance, like time and attendance software, like basically any HR software. So it's like expense management, but health, I think TriNet for most people, they probably know it as like, oh, the company that provides my health insurance and my payroll and my health benefits.
You said when we first talked that you had about like 15 jobs, right? So through all those companies that you've worked in, all those roles, what are some common themes of a good work environment that people should look out for in terms of like looking for new employment?
It sounds corny, but I really do think Glassdoor is like pretty accurate. I did a couple of videos about this as well. Because I've had 15 different jobs in like the last 11 years, like everyone always asks, hey, Davidson, like, what's a good company? You have to figure out for yourself, right? Everyone has different things. But I would say like, even if you didn't care about these things, I do think these are important that I wish I thought about when I was like 21 years old, right? One is like, and now, and I always forget, even though this is probably the most important thing, it's like your manager. Like if you have a really good manager, like super important. They can vouch for you. They can help you get promotions. They can get you raised. Like they will teach you a lot. Sometimes I'm just like, oh, but the salary is good. It's like, you can have an amazing salary, but if you don't like your manager, then like you're screwed because you're going to like butt heads. Number two, I would say like I think the product is really important. Like I've worked for companies that like paid pretty well, but I didn't really care about the product as much. So it just made going to work really painful, you know, Monday mornings. So obviously when I sold like LinkedIn Learning, like I really enjoyed that. So I'm like, oh, like this doesn't feel like work. And then number three is, for me, at least I like the diversity, inclusion, and belonging piece. So like companies, and it's sometimes hard to tell because everyone's like, oh, we're super diverse and all this stuff. But you know, like when you interview, you're like, okay, I'm literally the only minority out of like the 90 people in this building. Like for me, like that would be a no-go just because like I appreciate like diversity of like opinions. I appreciate that. But not everyone cares about that.
The standard story, so to speak, is like, oh, we believe in DEI. And then you can see their board of directors and it's all white, right? So it's the same concept.
Yeah, exactly. So true.
I forgot to ask this when you first talked about LinkedIn. As someone who's a job seeker, do you think LinkedIn Premium is worth it or no?
I mean, I'm biased because I worked at LinkedIn. So we're almost like brainwashed to say like, yeah, of course it's worth it. I mean, look, like I think investing in your career is like the most important thing, right? It's like, what else would you be spending that money on? Like more cappuccinos, more bubble tea, like a couple of nice restaurants, right? Like, yeah, that's cool. You know, I get to go a Michelin star restaurant, like, you know, one or two times. But like, I think, okay, if this thing is going to help me get seen by more recruiters, it's going to help me be able to in-mail and in-mail strategically, right? Like not just like copy and paste in-mail. Like, hey, you know, Max, I listened to three of your episodes and like, dude, like I really enjoyed like this particular episode with Davidson, like you guys made me laugh, like you guys made me think differently. Like that's like a very considerate message, right? Then it's worth it. But if you're going to like do in-mail, but you're too afraid to reach out to people, then it's like, okay, then it's probably not worth it because you're not even utilizing it.
Good insights. Thanks for sharing that. That's a good concept in terms of what you just said about people saying like, oh, I like self-improvement, but then when it's time to pay up, they don't want to pay, right? It's one of those things like when it comes to spending on leisure, for example, like going out to a fancy restaurant or buying bubble tea every day, they feel it's easier for them to buy that, even though they have that instant gratification of like that pleasure for a few hours or like 30 minutes. But when it comes to like self-improvement, they're like, whoa, that's a bit expensive, right? Like the self-improvement, you're going to get more value in your investment compared to like spending bubble tea, right? Because you get some refreshment, but it doesn't really help you after that compared to like LinkedIn Learning or LinkedIn Premium, where like you can build contacts, you can use LinkedIn Learning because it's part of the premium service, build up your skills, all for the same price, right? So like, for example, 5 days of bubble tea versus like 1 month of LinkedIn Premium. From your experience, like, why is that? Where they find it easier to spend money on frivolous things? People do have to eat, right? But why do you think that it's easier to buy those luxuries compared to buying something that could actually help them?
This might be a hot take. This might be a controversial opinion, but it's all good. I think most people, I hate to say this, but 90% of people are lazy, right? Like we take the path of least resistance. It's much easier for me to blame like, oh, well, the economy sucks. Like, oh, like there's no good jobs out there. Or like, oh, they're going to hire someone from Stanford anyway. So why bother even applying to this like highly coveted position, right? I mean, I've been guilty of it. I've blamed everyone else. I'm like, oh, it's because I'm Asian. Or oh, because like I'm a short dude, right? Whatever excuse I've made, right? Or like, oh, the hiring manager is white. Like they only want to hire like white athletes, right? Literally took no responsibility, right? And still kept, like you said, spent it on like the night out in Atlantic City or Vegas or whatever else I did, right? And it was just easier that way. Like, it's just easy. But the moment of truth was like, I had a mentor, his name is Tommy Tran. And he was like, Dave said, like, you need to get your fucking shit together. Like, he's like, you're fucking partying, like you're 21 years old. This is when I was like 26. You can't even pay the bills. Like, you're asking me for money, like all this. And he's like, dude, you need to like stop playing video games and get your fucking shit together. And he was like the only one that ever said that to me. And all of my other friends was like, yeah, like the economy's hard, the market sucks, like there's a recession, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it's like I can either listen to my friends and like continue making like at that time, I was making like $65,000 a year, or I can listen to this mentor who's like a millionaire and he's like, yo, like get your shit together, bro. And that's when I was like, you know what, all right, like let me like take the uncomfortable thing and invest. I invested, and this is crazy because I was only making like 60 something thousand. I invested in a $16,500 coaching program that felt like so much money like at that time. Now it's like, you know, I spend at least $17K every year on self-development, right? But like at that time, it literally felt like the scariest, like I was shaking when I put my credit card down. But thank God I did that, right? Because it was like the first time where I was like, all right, like let me like take responsibility for something for once in my life.
For sure. And look where you are now. You're interviewing people on the street, and a lot of people are afraid of like just asking someone on the street for directions, right? And now you're recording people, which brings me to our next point of discussion, right? So for the first half of our conversation, we talked more about your career, the learning lessons along the way. But now let's talk about your current journey, which is content creation in the form of interviews. So how did that come about in terms of first deciding that you want to become a content creator? And then second, why the interview format is what you're leading with at the moment?
That's a good question. So luckily, like I've been fortunate, like because I've been in sales pretty much my whole career, I would like meet all these really successful salespeople that were making like boatloads of money, right? Because when I was an SDR, I would be paired up with like these enterprise account executives that were making like 300K to 600K. And then I would just ask them like a billion questions. Like as soon as they got done, I'm like asking them another question. I was like, dude, I wish I like recorded this. So then at LinkedIn, I was like, why don't I just record? Because, you know, in sales, it's pretty easy to see how much everyone's making because it's like all the stats are like up there because they do that on purpose because they want you to be like competitive and the dopamine hit of like getting to the top, et cetera, right? But I was like, let me just like record this. So at LinkedIn, I recorded like 70 interviews with like a lot of like all the top reps. And then I was like, yo, I'm like pretty good at this interviewing thing. And then people told me too, they're like, yo, you ask like really good questions. I was like, huh. But to your point, yeah, I saw the Daniel Max and all this stuff. And I was like, yo, like I could do that. And I was like, wait, why don't I just do that? So then I started doing that. And then now I network with all these random people across the world. Like, you know, when I travel to like other countries, like I'll interview people. So I'm like, this is cool. And then it's like networking too, right? Because you never know like who you're going to meet.
So how did you get started? Like, tell me the first approach you did, so to speak, in terms of like starting off your channel.
I mean, yeah, as you create content, so you get it. Like in the beginning, like we just suck, right? Like the first, at least for me, like the first 100 and honestly, the first 150 podcast episodes sucked. When I look back at it, I'm like, oh God, cringe. Like, oh, I want to just crawl up. And then after you do like another 150, you're like, oh, I'm getting a little bit better. And now it's like tolerable where like I rewatched it, Stranger Interviews, and I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm actually proud of this. Because before I'd be like, oh, I used too many stutter words. Like, I could have asked this. I should have paused. Like, oh, I'm using too much. Whatever. We're always criticizing ourselves, right? I just like do it. And then like, you know, whether it's like publishing books or starting a YouTube channel, like trying to understand TikTok. For me, I'm not afraid to like try, but I think that prevents 99% of people. Like, they're just like paralyzed by the fear of like what other people think. And do I get a lot of like hate comments? Like, yeah, I do. I'm not going to lie. Like 3 days ago, someone was like, the f*** is this? Like on one of my videos. And I was like, oh no, like that hurt. You know, but I'm so glad I did it. But yeah, it's scary, Rick. I've tried making all types of videos. I've tried just like turning on the camera. Lately, I've been live streaming. Like now with a lot of the Stranger Interviews, like I'm right next to Times Square. So after this, I'm just going to like live stream going up to random strangers. And that's like today, the rest of today is going to look like.
That's awesome. And like going back to the rejection part, right? Like what's the worst rejection? They ignore you or they tell you, oh, F off. Like yeah. How bad does it really get for you in terms of like asking strangers if they want to do a quick interview with you?
You know, this, and Max, you probably understand this because like you've interviewed so many people. I need to also like be smart about what types of questions I ask people, because I'll go up to like Wall Street Bros and then I'm asking them questions that they probably don't care about. Like I'll be like, what's the meaning of life? Or like, you know what I mean? Whereas like, I should be like, yo, like how much money do you make in Wall Street? Like, I think that would be a smarter question. So I learned the hard way, right? So I have had people that said yes. And then I show them the questions I'm going to ask, because sometimes people be like, well, what types of questions you're going to ask? And I'm asking them all these deep philosophical questions. And they're like, never mind. Like, no, I'm good. You know, and I'm like, but yeah, I think like the worst rejection is just people just like, they think I'm trying to like ask them for donations for a charity or something like that. So you can tell they're just like, no. Funny enough, me documenting the rejections actually gets a lot more views, because like, people love watching people get rejected for some reason. It's like people just enjoy that. People love, like every time I post like videos of me getting rejected, I get way more likes on that than when I get it right. It's interesting.
Yeah, because like as bad as it sounds, the internet's a very hateful place and people want to see people fail, right? Oh, look at this loser, blah, 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 right? Like there's this channel you used to call Fail Army or something. I don't know if that's what it was called, but it's just like compilations of people failing, right? And it always goes viral because people are laughing at their failure, right? But at least they're making an attempt. And those are the people that will succeed in the long term, right? Compared to someone laughing at someone's failure.
Yeah, for sure.
I was looking at your YouTube channel before our conversation, and you have close to 700K YouTube subscribers, which is like a lot, right? Like TikTok, 700K, a big deal. Like anybody can get followers. Instagram, okay, like it's still hard, but it's not as hard as YouTube. So can you tell us about your YouTube journey? Like when did you start doing this channel, and then how long it took you to see traction and where it built up to where it is now?
Honestly, YouTube's like the hardest game, I would say. I mean, obviously, because I worked at LinkedIn, I think LinkedIn's like easier, right? So maybe everyone has a different opinion on this. I think YouTube's like the most vulnerable, right? Like, because even today, like I was just driving, because I was driving to the train station to go to New York today, because I met with my business partner. And in addition to this, I just started my own IT consulting company. But I was literally just live streaming. And then I was just like, man, this is so weird. Like, why are these 78 people watching me in live time? Like when I was literally doing nothing, I was just talking about life. It's hard because I'm like, well, I have to add value. There's like part of me, like the people pleasing me is like, oh, I have to add value. Like I can't just literally be walking around just showing like New York City. But the funny thing is like, that's interesting to some people, like just walking around like, hey, this is Times Square. Hey guys, this is Bryant Park. Hey guys, this is like the frozen fountains. Like that's interesting to some people. So yeah, it took me 5 years, I feel like, until I started to see like any traction. Like I'll take that back. Like when I worked at LinkedIn, I felt like I had some traction just because like, I guess a lot of people were just fascinated by, and a lot of the LinkedIn people I interviewed were like LinkedIn famous. So they were like LinkedIn influencers, right? But anyone who doesn't work at LinkedIn would not know who they are at all. But if you worked at LinkedIn, you're like, oh my God, Brian Morrow, oh, Brian Mullins, like those guys are always on top of the leaderboard. But then once I left LinkedIn, then I was like back to nobody essentially. So then I was like, I had to start over. I think I've only started getting traction because I'm not gonna lie, I paid for a lot of ads for my YouTube and that helped me a lot, because prior to ads, I was getting maybe on average like 200-300 the most like per video. And then I was like, you know what? I'm gonna double down on my like content creation. So I spent like a ton of money. And then that helped me get like 500K more subscribers. But it's helpful because now every one of my videos gets like at least 1,000, whereas like prior to the ads, I was getting like 200-300 per video. So I think it's worth it because I think my business is always going to be around, right? Like I'm still a relatively young guy.
Everybody, like all these content gurus, right? They'd be like, oh, like you have to fix your hook. You have to like do these effects. And you said, screw all that. I'm just going to spend money on ads just to like speed up my progress, right? But a lot of these people don't really highlight the ad part of it. They always want to talk about organic. Because I guess, unfortunately, like people want to make money without spending money, which doesn't make sense, right? Yeah, I want to start a business and make money, but I don't want to spend any money to do it, right? That seems to be like the old school mindset. But you like already proven that, yeah, organic did help me a bit, but what it really took off is when I actually spent a lot of money on YouTube ads to generate some traction. And when you mean YouTube ads, you mean basically you post a video and then you throw YouTube ad money on it, right? To get more reach?
Yeah, exactly. And to double down on what you just said, I'm also obsessed, and you're a coach, you're a career coach, so you totally get it. This is crazy. Like even saying this to like a lot of people are like, what the f-? I spent over $150,000 on just coaches I've hired in the last 8 years. So like, that's like a lot of money for people who like don't understand like the value of coaching. They're like, dude, that's like more than my college tuition. I'm like, yeah, but what I got from all these coaches is 10x what I personally have learned in my, not only my MBA, but my combined with my undergrad, because these skills that I have from all these coaches has helped me like everything, right? Publish 5 books, 300 podcast episodes, like all these other accomplishments, another book coming out, right? To me, like school didn't teach me any of that. You know, like school just taught me how to network essentially.
I appreciate your transparency in terms of how much money you spent on coaching. You said 150K, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah, over 8 years.
Okay, over 8 years. How much did you spend on YouTube ads, if you don't mind sharing that?
It was a lot, man. It was like 38,780 or something like that.
Oh, that's a very specific number.
yeah, it was
over what time horizon? Like, what time horizon? A couple of years or?
No, it was so funny enough. Prior to the ads, I only had like 5,000 subscribers, and then the ads got it up like to like 500K pretty much. So literally, if you did the math, I paid here. Let me do the math real quick. 33 divided by 500K. Yeah. So basically every dollar gave me like 74 people per dollar, basically. That's how I calculated.
But over a span of how long? Like you said like 2 years or?
This was like all at once.
Oh, like, once? What, like in a month?
In like 3 months.
Oh, 3 months. Oh, wow. That's over 10K a month. Yeah, you just threw it.
Because like this is how I justified it, right? I'm like, I know I'm going to start my own business soon. Because it took me 7 years to get up to 17,000 LinkedIn followers organically. And that was like me like literally going to like, I probably have been to 2,000 networking events in my entire lifetime, right? It took me 7 years to get to 17,000 people. I'm like, I need to like accelerate that. Because like, let's say I want to sell a course for like $50. Even if 1% buys that, it'll make it the course over time, because every month I'll have another $50 course, right? So that's how I justified it. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to reach as many people if I did it organically.
Yeah, actually going back to the LinkedIn real quick. Well, you added me on LinkedIn, I think last week. So you see, I have 25,000 followers. So during the heyday of LinkedIn organic, which was like during COVID or beginning of COVID, I had 600 followers. And then like just by talking to popular LinkedIn influencers, like there's this guy, Justin Welch. I'm not sure if you know him.
Oh yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah, I bought his course. Well, I forgot what his original course was called, LinkedIn Playbook or something. And then he changed the LinkedIn operating system. I didn't get as much value in the second one. I did get a lot of value in the first one. That helped me propel to like 20,000 followers. I was getting 1,000 to 1,500 followers a month, but then it's really slowed down because I've just not focused and concentrated on that as much as I used to. Now it's just really trickled. But LinkedIn's not really my concentration anymore. Now it's similar to you with ads. Now it's just Facebook and Instagram ads. And again, it's a lot faster in terms of like getting good results compared to like doing the organic. So for me, like organic on LinkedIn helped me get started. But if for me to maintain and grow, you do have to eventually spend money on ads, which I'm now doing with the Facebook, Instagram stuff. But the point I was trying to make is, when it comes to like growth, like everybody just focuses on organic. But the thing with organic is like the algorithm changes so much that it's easier just to throw money at it and then like grow it that way. Which leads me to my next point about like, you said like with the YouTube ads, you got to 500K, but then with that huge subscriber base from your ad strategy, now your gang's actually a lot higher than before, right? Because one of the fears a lot of people have in terms of like buying subscribers, so to speak, or buying followers is that they won't be as engaged in your content, or they might be like bots, so to speak. So I'm not sure what your opinion is on that.
This is an interesting thought, right? It's hard for me not to look back at my previous pre-ads because like I was like literally throwing spaghetti at the wall. Like prior to LinkedIn ads, I had 368 videos, right? The average video got like 68 views, right? Since the ads, my average video, like even the worst video, like the shittiest video of me, and then views, maybe views shouldn't count as much as it does, but like the shittiest video of me walking around the lake because it's beautiful and I'm like, there's a reflection of the sky, right? Like no value added whatsoever gets like 3,000 views. So it's hard for me to think that because like, so even if 2,000 of those like are people that will never buy a course, I think it's just in some ways, like it's unfortunate we live in this world of like, people do care about the numbers, like validation. It's kind of like, why would I buy a course from a guy who's like not Jack? But if you look like Alex Hormozi, like, okay, and buy whatever you say when it comes to like macros and like putting, you know? So similarly, like, and I hate to say this, but like, I think it did give me a little bit more credibility. Like ever since I got more followers, like I'm on podcasts like pretty much almost every day now, right? Prior to that, like no one gave a shit about Davidson, really. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, 17,000 was like, I mean, you have 25,000 followers on LinkedIn. That's freaking impressive, dude. Because it took me a really long time to get close to 18,000, you know?
I talk about jobs, right? So it's a bit easier because LinkedIn is a job site. I'm a big fan of Hormozi, right? I listen to his podcast as well.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, he's definitely awesome. Yeah. And I've learned a lot of like business sense from him as well, right? Again, when it comes to like, are you trying to run a business or are you just trying to like create content, right? There is a difference. And if you are serious in terms of like a business owner, to get a business owner mindset, you do have to spend money on ads because that's the fastest way that you can scale and get the exposure you're looking for.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, luckily I've been in sales my whole life. So like that definitely helped because, you know, every book of business I had, you had to think like, yeah, okay, is this event worth my time? What's the ROI? Like email marketing, is it worth me investing this much time creating marketing campaigns, right? So, you know, luckily I had some exposure to a lot of these like A-B testing and just like, but yeah, Russell Brunson helped a lot. Like you said, Alex Hormozi, like 100 million offers, leads, sales, like that, all that stuff helped a lot.
Just to close out our conversation, you said you are starting up your consultancy. So how did that come about? So you went from like working in the tech space, working with these reputable companies, then you quit to become a content creator, and now you're starting up your own consulting firm. So how did that come about?
So I think part of it is because like I was always entrepreneurial. Like I always knew I wanted to start my own business one day. And I was doing it on the side. So I have been career coaching for the last like 7 years, mostly through referrals, right? Mostly because like, they're like, yo, you got to talk to Davidson. He helped me get a job at XYZ. So that was like a lot of it. Like the reason why I chose Valenta, which is a franchise. So, you know, think like Shake Shack, In-N-Out Burger, McDonald's model. So it just makes it a lot easier because like, I would hate to have to create from scratch. Like, hey, what's the menu? What's like the playbook? What's the operating system? But luckily with Valenta, it's like, hey, like we have all the systems. You can pick and choose what route you want to take, but at least we have like this playbook to give to you. If you want to sell ERP implementations, you want to sell, you know, implementing Salesforce CRM, like you can choose, but at least like here's like the playbook. So that just made it a lot easier. So I chose that because I was always, you know, when you go through like that many jobs, you kind of, you're like, okay, maybe I'm just not meant to be told what to do. Like maybe I'm more of an entrepreneur. So I think a lot of people like kept saying like, Davidson, you start your own business. Davidson, you start your own business. And then this guy, William, who's one of my mentors, like he's been a serial entrepreneur for like 15 years. He's Asian, you know, he's Taiwanese. And I cold called him. And the reason why he got back to me is because he's like, you're Asian. That's why I wanted to help you out. So the last 7 years, we would have lunch like maybe once every 4 months. And every month he'd be like, yo, you got to start your own business. Yo, you got to start your own business. And then finally, like I listened to him and I started my own business. And unfortunately, I have investors in my businesses as well. So that helps as well, because then there's a little bit less risk. But obviously, like there's still risk, right? Like I left jobs where I was making on average like over 200K to like literally making zero. But I know like in 5 years, like 200K will be, I could probably make that monthly once I get into a place where, you know, I have like a strong product and, you know, implement everything that I'm learning from all these coaches and mentors, essentially.
Yeah. As the saying goes, short-term pain for long-term gain, right?
Exactly.
You've had interesting career, right? What is one of the big learning lessons that you want my listeners to take away from your journey throughout the years?
Hiring a coach, right? Like what you did, right? Hiring a coach, like ROI wise, has been like the best, because like the coach helped me be able to believe in myself when no one did, you know? And then it just helped me be able to have like a safe space where I can like talk about like crazy shit. Like, hey, am I crazy for thinking like I want to just go and travel for 16 days solo road trip, but like just go up to random strangers and ask them how they're doing? They're like, the coach is like, yeah, you should do that if that's what your heart is telling you. Because like, you know, you ask like your mom that, they'll be like, the fuck, dude? So like, no, you shouldn't be doing that, you know? And then the second thing is like, yeah, just don't be afraid to like I love what you're doing. Like you're podcasting, right? I think anywhere where you're adding value, you're like going deep into, and you're building like genuine relationships, like what you're doing, like you never know, right? Like maybe both of us one day will be speaking at different conferences and I'd be like, hey, like, you know, let me introduce you to Max, right? You know, so you just don't know. So I would say like, just network with as many people as possible.
So Davidson, again, really appreciate your time in terms of discussing your career journey, helping my listeners, whatever journey they may be going to, whether it's like looking for a new job, starting a business, or even becoming a content creator. So if you want to reach out to you to learn more about your journey or how you could possibly help them, what's the best way to do so?
So my website, davidsonhang.com. Like you said, I'm like all over all the socials, so you can just Google me and I'm on pretty much every platform at this point, producing content on a daily basis. So it's hard to miss me.
Do you have a team, by the way, in terms of your content creation, or you do everything yourself?
Yeah, I had a team, and in typical Davidson fashion, I like overhired. So I had like too big of a team, and then now I had to scale it down a little bit more. So I still have a team, but it's not like I'm not burning a ridiculous amount of cash as much anymore, which is nice. So it's like a little bit more sustainable now. But I have so much content that it'll take me like a year to like finally post everything, I think.
Hey, it's always good to have a backlog of content. So then if you have an off week, you can still use that, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Appreciate your time, Davidson. And best of luck with your new coaching consulting firm. And hopefully you get 1 million subscribers by end of year. I mean, like, we're only in February, so you have still 10 months to go.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you found this content valuable, here's 3 ways I can help you achieve your career goals for free. First, subscribe to this podcast as I post 2 episodes a week. Number 2, leave a 5-star review as this helps build the credibility of the show so we can gain access to more influential people to interview and bring those lessons to you to help elevate your career. And number 3, connect with me on social media. There's a link in the show notes for you to click on that compiles all my active social media accounts, making it easy for you to find me and connect with me. Thank you again for listening, and until next time. We'll be right back.